No.
You sure?
No.
Are there any applications?
21.
Oh, really?
Good. How many?
21.
You're one of them?
Good. We'll go ahead and start. We can start with four, can't we?
Yeah.
I'll ask Bob to ask the blessing before we start.
Lord God, we thank you for the opportunity to come together as a board and the honor and the privilege of trying to help this county progress forward through planning and efforts thereof. We thank you for the opportunity to be able to serve, the privilege to be able to serve. Lord, thank you for this magnificent earth that you've given us and all of the blessings that we have in this county with clean air, clean water, and good people. Lord, it's an honor and a privilege, and we thank you for that. As we go through our meeting tonight, be with us, guide us, give us soundness of mind to make the best decisions possible in the fairest, most equitable way, and to be representatives of all that you stand for, Lord. When this meeting is over, go with us to our homes, our families, and our friends. Keep us safe, watch over us, protect us, and bring us safely back together again. We ask in thy name. Amen.
Join me for the pledge.
Attention, salute, pledge. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. With that, we'll call the meeting to order. I'd like to welcome everyone for coming out tonight. And hopefully we'll have another board member coming in the next few minutes. First thing we have is a public comment section, if y'all would like to have anything to say.
This is Chuck and Gail Blunt. It's been some years since we've been to one of these meetings.
Good.
Welcome.
We're glad to have you.
So I put my application in to get on the board. I thought maybe I could come back and take a look.
Okay. Thanks. The next item is the approval of the agenda. Before we do that, since we don't currently have a chairman, we would entertain a motion to move the under new business planning board officers elections to move that up to the first item on the agenda.
Under you're going to move it to where now?
Just move it up to the very next item.
Oh, okay.
After item three.
I'll make that motion.
Motion's been made. Second. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Okay. And the floor is open for nominations for chairman.
I nominate Zach.
I'll second that nomination.
Do we do other nominations, or do we just vote on one at a time, or how do we?
It might be good for people to hear whether you would accept it.
I would be willing to accept it.
Please, can I hear that railroad whistle? Well, Mike, you've been around. You're local. You know the county. You know the people. And I, in all honesty, I think you do a good job.
Thank you.
Same here. Okay.
Plus, you're an engineer.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. I don't get to pass the gavel this time. I've done this about three times.
Well, we need to get you a gavel.
See, if you hadn't moved this up on the agenda, you
Well, now we'll open the floor for a vice chairman.
And vice chair calls the meeting to order and does the items of business when the chair is not there.
Well, I would nominate Bob for that.
I'll second.
Those of you that have been on the board longer, though.
He's the only one.
Well, I would. The reason I say this is because you have dealt with more of the business of this board longer than I have. I'm not saying that I wouldn't be willing to do it, but I would absolutely give anyone else that's been on this board the first shot at it. Especially those of you that went through that planning process that we did, what, a year or 2 years ago?
Mm-hmm. I think I'm the only one.
You're the last one.
Yeah.
Lauren came on right after. Right after that. Along with Sandy.
Yeah.
You were there.
We came on about the same time.
We did. Yeah.
Those were contentious times, weren't they?
They were.
Can you hear? Sort of. Okay. You can be the chair if you need to.
Can I offer an alternative motion? No offense.
Oh, no, that's fine. Go ahead.
I would like to nominate Sandy. I think she has been here a while, is always very thoughtful and considerate, and asks some great questions.
Thank you.
I'll second that. If you will accept.
If you would accept, yes.
Sandy, you've got a way of looking at things that make people feel comfortable about a controversial issue. In the short time I've been here, I've seen that.
Okay.
And sometimes that's just important. You get things more done by the heart instead of by the book.
All right, I would be willing to accept.
All right, I'll second that then.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. Next on the agenda, the approval of minutes from January 17th.
Sandy did provide a few edits. There was a sentence that was incomplete. It is now complete. And there were a couple of minor grammatical changes that have been made since what was sent out.
That is just a teacher name. They were great minutes, oh my gosh. Sarah, you did a great job. Thank you. I've never done it before.
Do we have an approval motion to approve?
Motion to accept the minutes from.
Yeah, I'll second.
Yeah,
all in favor?
Aye.
All right, next on the agenda, subdivision approvals and updates.
Since January 12th, we have had 3 family subdivisions, 6 changing of boundary lines between adjoining property owners, 1 recombination, 1 inherited lot, 1 greater than 10 acre exception, and 1 2 lot subdivision. So there has been 1 subdivision, and the others have been exemptions to the definition of subdivision. You guys have any questions?
Is the last actual subdivision approval or expansion, was it the Rock Creek thing up in Sapphire? Or has there been one since then?
There was the one, the Whisper Hills, that you all looked at the master plan of and provided a variance for the one-way roads. His plans have changed. He still plans on developing in phases, ultimately the same number of units, but he has tested the soils and is staying away from a section that has the best draining soils for septic tanks. And so phase two is significantly altered from what you saw, and the one-way roads are no longer required with the new design of avoiding that. So the same number of lots are there, the same location, the same concept. And so in the past, if the lots have not changed, you have not had to reapprove the master plan, because the overall concept of design and services are the same. But the configuration of the roads has changed between phase one and phase two, and phase three. The roads have changed.
That will actually bring it into conformity.
Yes.
So it'll
yes.
be better anyway.
It will.
Okay.
And that means the roads will be a little, well, they'll have to be wider and so forth, right? A little bit.
They were narrower because they were one way, and so being two way, there is it will be wider. Yes.
See, I think that'll be benefit to some of those long wheelbase fire trucks and stuff like that. Even if they go against traffic, they can turn without getting off the pavement. And also, yeah, okay, that's good.
So that is the last one that you all saw and the last one I have seen. There have been discussions with potential smaller developments, but nothing has moved forward yet.
Okay. Next in old business, we have an noise ordinance review.
At the last meeting, you all asked for more information from the sheriff's office regarding what would be beneficial to include as you consider revising the noise ordinance. And stapled to the subdivision update is a short email from David Mahoney, Sheriff Mahoney, and he would suggest that the two items that would make the ordinance more objective would be a more comprehensive list of what noises are prohibited and what would be exempted. He thought that a permit process for special events would be helpful, and decibel levels would assist them in determining violations or a lack of violations. Due to the concern over decibel levels, the county manager would like the county attorneys to come speak with you about the legality of including decibel levels and the enforceability of it. So while the version that you have in your hand had a permitting process added and had decibels added, tonight I would recommend that we leave the decibel levels alone until we hear from the county attorneys.
And that would be at the next meeting.
If they're available. They were not available tonight, but they thought that they would be available in March. Also inviting the public to the meeting to hear about what the planning board is doing. It is always advertised, and we appreciate the public coming, but doing a special notice to invite the public to be aware that you all are talking about noise, the noise ordinance, would also be beneficial. So, in your packet, you received a draft of the noise ordinance. A lot of what occurred was stylization, formatting. The first change you'll see on page one, under jurisdiction and administration, highlighting where the noise ordinance will be kept, where it's available, and who is enforcing it was added to be similar to the other ordinances. So you'll notice the Transylvania County Sheriff or their appointee shall be known as the enforcement officers. That was not in the other one, but they were the enforcers of the noise ordinance.
I'm glad that we're doing this on all the ordinances, you know, getting it right down the open and who's in charge.
In the previous version, the definitions were interspersed with the regulations. And so a definition section has been created to bring out some of the terms that were in the previous version. They are just, and you'll see them scratched out below. Unreasonably loud was in the previous version. It has just moved up to the definition section. Disturbing was defined, but it is now in the definition section. The items of decibel meter and ambient noise level were added in case a decibel level was included in the ordinance. Because if we're going to include a limit or an amount of decibels, a decibel level, we need to be able to use a uniform definition. Noise was also added because noise is used a lot in this ordinance.
That's such a relative term.
Noise?
Yeah.
And so it, while we are waiting for decibels, I would wait on looking at the definitions 1.1, 1.2, and 1.3. But if you want to discuss noise and see if it meets the definition that the planning board would approve,
now, looking at 1.4, a person of ordinary firmness and sensibilities, what is another synonym for firmness? There's a word I'm trying to think of, and it's not coming to me again. Abnormal something or another. I can't think of the word.
So 1.4, instead of firmness, you would like...
Well, in other words, like law enforcement. In other words, what would a person put in the same situation, a reasonable person, do?
Uniformity?
Maybe that might be what I'm thinking about. A person of ordinary uniformity and...
No.
What does that mean?
Yeah, I mean, I just, there's a word missing there. And
I know,
we use
this word.
Where did this definition come from originally?
The disturbing was in the current noise ordinance. That's where it came from. It was just moved. You'll see it on page 3, B, disturbing is there.
Oh, gotcha.
It has been moved up to the definition section.
See what I'm trying to think of.
So, thank you for pointing out that we can discuss it and see if that's how we want to.
Do you want some synonyms? Would that help? durability, hardness, inflexibility, toughness. Impervious, rigidity, solidity, temper. Inflexibility.
Could we?
Go ahead. Do we need it?
Go ahead.
I mean, could we just get rid of firmness and say proportion of ordinary sensibilities? I guess I'm asking, what does firmness add to the party here?
Well, one of the definitions was rigidity.
It was, yeah.
And so, ordinary rigidity or firmness, some people are more rigid than others.
I mean, I'm taking this to mean, they are not infirm. So they're of ordinary health, have ordinary hearing. So in terms of just like they're a normal, for lack of a better term, person in the population. Someone, for example, I think they're trying to say that if someone has lost 70% of their hearing, they would not be able to really determine what disturbing is. So that's how I'm interpreting the firmness.
The firmness.
As an opposition to infirm.
Like reasonable faculties.
Right.
Right.
Or someone who is hypersensitive to something.
Or hypersensitive, right. Someone who has 150% hearing,
right.
Super hearing or something.
Yeah, normal and reasonable. That's the word I was. I knew the light bulb would come on.
Reasonable?
Normal and reasonable faculties and sensibilities, maybe. Does that make sense?
Is it just auditory, or is it also temper?
Oh gosh, yeah, I would have to include temper, because some people get bent out of joint.
That's what I thought it was referring to, was temper. I wasn't thinking about the health of someone.
Yeah, I forget the legal term, but it's basically like a common person.
In the last ordinance that you all updated, you asked if there was a definition in North Carolina General Statutes. Would you like me to look and see if there is a definition for all of these in North Carolina General Statutes? Or do you want to craft one yourselves?
There's not like a state noise ordinance system.
The North Carolina legislation that allows us to have noise ordinances is one sentence. It's much shorter than the watershed ordinance legislation or the mountain ridge protection legislation. Very one sentence doesn't give you much to go on. However, there could be other things in nuisance or other avenues that could have led the legislature to define disturbing noise or unreasonable. So that might be a place to start. If you want to revisit the definitions that were already in the noise ordinance, you can either do it and wordsmith it to mean what your intent is.
Do you feel comfortable with us making our own?
Personally, I'm okay with ordinary firmness and sensibilities. I mean, it covers like someone that would be hypersensitive to sounds, or like maybe an autistic person that, you know.
Something else I thought of that aren't using drugs or alcohol at the time. I don't know.
That might be the ordinary.
Ordinary, okay.
Not under the influence, but ordinary.
Okay.
Joe, I'm just thinking that if it read noise, which is perceived by a person of normal or ordinary and reasonable faculties and sensibilities as interrupting a normal peace, etc. Something along those lines. How are you?
Normal and ordinary.
I ran late, but I could not walk out of that meeting across the street. So.
Person of normal and ordinary. That's what you said.
Well, temperament. Are we looking for like temperament, maybe, instead of firmness, or?
That's what I was looking at. I mean, not a person that gets
riled up too. Yeah. Can we put that in? Doesn't get riled up.
Well, you could just include temperament, just ordinary firmness, sensibilities, and temperament.
Yeah.
Okay, so ordinary firmness, sensibilities, and temperament.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Ordinary firmness, sensibilities, and temperament.
Yeah. So ordinary sensibilities, is that like not super sensitive to sound?
Not super sensitive to your neighbor. I mean, you really have to deal with the sheriff's department trying to enforce this, because if there's enough noise and enough frustration for somebody to actually call the sheriff's department, it's
normally
in a late night situation, isn't it?
Yeah, that sounds good, right? That's good.
Where are we at?
Take out firmness, are we? No?
Ordinary firmness, sensibilities, and temperament. Okay. Or adding temperament. Do we need to include noise? As I said, that was added.
Well, what did the sheriff say? Didn't he want more definitions?
He wanted more things to be exclusively. I did not do that, truthfully. I did not add things that were prohibited versus exempt. I didn't feel comfortable as staff doing that without your review. But noise is used a lot. Do we need to define it? Or
it certainly doesn't hurt.
Yeah, I mean, I think we do need to define it. It's just how objective can we get?
This one either came from the city of Brevard or the city of Asheville's definitions.
And see, it's talking about not only volume, but the quality of sound.
Yep.
That tends to be a disturbance. I think it'd be good to add it.
Yeah. Especially since if we keep unreasonably loud noise, we have to.
So is everybody okay with noise, leaving it in?
Yeah.
To be consistent with other ordinances, I would take out the word means.
The word which?
Means.
Right. Yeah.
So noise, any sound or combination of sounds which, because of its volume or quality, tends to disturb reasonable persons of normal sensitivity or to interfere with normal human activity.
Be consistent.
Means, but if you have any other changes.
So, what's the difference between noise and reasonably loud? I mean, a noise in this definition is anything that's unreasonably loud, right? The way we're defining noise. And we're saying a noise tends to disturb reasonable persons, but an unreasonably loud means a noise which is incompatible with time and location.
See, that even adds to it.
So the noise regulations do not necessarily regulate just plain noise. Mm-hmm. What they regulate is any unreasonably loud and or disturbing noise. If you look down at the noise regulations, and noise of such character being unreasonably loud or disturbing, in intensity and duration, as to be detrimental to the health, safety, and welfare of any reasonable person, is prohibited. There's the ordinary firmness and sensibilities again. Mm-hmm. It's almost verbatim down there.
So we were right on target.
Shouldn't we just add temperament there also?
I think so.
Yeah, you could take it. Of ordinary firmness, sensibilities, and temperament in the vicinity.
The location, if it were in a subdivision, say, as opposed to out on a road, maybe you have two or three neighbors or something.
Are you looking at 1.6?
I am.
Okay. So incompatible with time, location.
So is everybody good with that?
I think so.
Now you see, this is also where the voluntary ag districts tends to shield farms from not malicious but unreasonable lawsuits over sound and all that because of the importance of agriculture in the county. And see, that's already been passed by the commissioners, I believe. The,
it has.
The, or that voluntary ag ordinance.
Okay. Do we need to cross-reference that to be specific, objective?
Well, they talk about agriculture further on in here.
Okay.
Yep.
We're ready to move on to section two.
Yeah. Let's see here, 2.2. The use of a decimal meter goes right along with what David Mahoney was recommending.
But I would I would ask that we review section 2.2 after hearing from the attorneys. So it, please focus on the introductory paragraph of section 2 and 2.1 tonight, and then we'll revisit that after hearing from the attorneys.
That's what's your name? That was at the county commissioner meeting. She's the
Misty
county.
Bass, or oh, the new one.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's our county attorney now, right?
They both are for a little bit. Mary Ann is the new. They are both part time until Mary Ann comes on full time.
Okay,
that is my understanding.
Thank you. Now, 2.21, ambient noise levels is background noise, right?
Yeah, 2.2.1. Focus up here first.
Oh.
We're all this section we're not dealing with until after after the county attorney, because it's all related to decibel levels.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Okay. Done.
Because Sheriff Mahoney wanted you all to think about it, I included it, but we're not discussing it until next month after we hear from the county attorneys.
In 2.1, it lists all these factors that are to be considered.
Mm-hmm.
But is there somewhere else that it explains how those factors are to be considered? I mean, it says, for instance, one of the factors to be considered is whether the noise is related to the normal operation of a business or other labor activity. But it doesn't really say how you're to consider that. I mean, technically.
Noise off of Penrose Quarry versus noise off of the new construction, like the one where that bike company just moved into that building. That's night and day difference down there. And yet they're both normal. Or aircraft departing and arriving Transylvania Airport.
That's expected, though.
I would think.
On page six, criminal penalties, any deputy sheriff of Transylvania County having first investigated this matter pursuant to Article 6 above, Article 6 is determining whether it's noise that is unreasonably loud or disturbing using 2.1. May obtain criminal process for violation of the ordinance. That's where it comes into determining if it is unreasonably loud or disturbing. They take this into consideration. But there is no level of there, and I think that's why the sheriff is looking for decibel.
He's looking for something to be able to hang his hat on that'll hold up in a court of law. And this is such a nebulous thing. What's noise to one is not noise to another.
Yeah, if you've had a lot of background stuff going on, it's fairly loud, and then what might be noise wouldn't be in a case like that, because you're already used to a level of sound. It goes up a little bit, and it's past a certain decibel level, but it may not be disturbing because you're already...
For example, look at how everyone was used to the sounds and the noises and the bells and whistles when a coaster was operating. Everybody was used to it, and nobody thought anything about it because that was just a way of business.
And if some people would be offended, would think that was not good.
Yeah.
I feel so knowing that decibel levels is probably not going to hold up in court. Probably, I'm just saying probably. That we really need to have teeth in this that makes it easy for them, the sheriff's department, despite decibels. You know, it's simple.
I would imagine case histories of other court cases
And that's what the attorneys will provide us information on.
Yeah, because see, they have been decided upon what do you call certain decibel levels. And those theoretically set precedent in the court system. So that's where we'll get guidance from them on that.
I thought that was good when you, the fact that you had so many decibels above ambient noise. You know, that's what I'm saying is that some things that go on around you and you get used to it. I used to live in a subdivision that some distance away was a switching area for trains. I've been there a little while. I never heard them. My brother came to visit me and said, "How do you get around? Where do you get along with those trains all the time?" I said, "What trains?"
It would be nice to hear trains again.
I talked to a lady a few weeks ago that moved here from New Mexico and said when she first moved in that it took her like 3 or 4 nights to go to sleep because of the katydids.
Yeah. Can you imagine?
Can you imagine that? Yes, New Jersey, I live not on a track, you know, track, but maybe 300 yards after what you just did here. Just get used to it.
So as a standalone section, 2.1 is not very specific, but if you tie it into the exempted noises, that provides you a time of day for construction activities. If you tie it in to the noise from lawnmowers, that gives you a time of day. Noise prohibited, if you look at that in relation to 2.1, it gives you a time of day where dogs or other constrained animals that are frequently and habitually howling and yelping could be a nuisance, and that is the time of day. So the time of day is found throughout the ordinance, but it's not explicitly shown in 2.1. For construction and lawn maintenance, 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. is permitted on weekdays. And for construction, 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. on weekends. But it depends on the type or the source of the noise. If there is a time identified in the ordinance.
And it does exempt things we were talking about. I think they talk about EMS, factory whistles, aircraft, fireworks. They're all automatically exempted from this ordinance anyway. So, farming operations are completely exempt.
So time of day, if you wanted to clarify it, you could put a time of day there that is comparable to what is in other sections, or you can leave it for the person to read the entire ordinance.
Well, one of the things about that is the noise from lawnmowers, weed trimmers, blah, 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 between 6 a.m. and 9 p.m., but on weekends, if somebody's out mowing their lawn at 6 a.m., that's not a good thing. That's objectionable. So we should modify that to be like this one over here. 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. is one thing. 9 p.m. to...
But Kinsey,
weekends. Right?
I have to get to a soccer game, and I have to get to a soccer game that starts at 8 a.m., and it's going to be raining after the soccer game. The only time I can mow my yard is at 6 a.m. Now, I'm not going to be awake at 6 a.m., but think about, from another perspective, do we need to prohibit it between 6 and 8 on the weekends?
Yes.
Or with the amount of rain we get in this county,
You only have 1 hour a month to cut grass with an hour.
You know what I like?
And maybe at 4 a.m. I mean, you just got to go when you got
to
go.
It's like they're going to be mowing all morning.
You need to do that for folks. I've lived in a city where it was 9 a.m.
9 a.m., yeah.
So I might need to recuse myself. My lawnmower has enough lights on it to light up the whole community.
You can do it at night.
I mow all night long.
And of course, it depends too on the proximity to other houses.
And that is not defined. If you look back at 2.1, it says proximity to residential structures. It does not have a distance from residential structures.
I noticed that. And what proximity to one person is not for someone else.
So when we were looking at the sign ordinance, you all used the 500 feet. For off-premise signs, it couldn't be closer to a residential structure than 500 feet because the signs could be 150 feet
square.
I don't know if you all want to put a proximity in here or whether you want it as is.
I don't think I'd be in favor of a proximity.
All right.
Because it kind of depends on the noise, like how loud the noise is, too.
It doesn't really matter how close or how far away you are. It's just the level of the noise.
All right.
If you're in a place like the city of Brevard, then we're not doing anything. But if somebody's building a house next door, there's going to be a lot of noise there for a while. Don't have any choice, I guess, but to put up with it because you have to build a house. Now, if you're out in the country somewhere where the nearest house is a half mile away, what difference does it make?
It's a good point. Because, you know, in the summer, a lot of contractors start early in the morning to avoid the afternoon heat.
Yeah.
So, do you all have any changes you would like to recommend for 2.1? The only thing that has changed between the current version of the noise ordinance and this draft is G was added. So in determining whether a noise is unreasonably loud and or disturbing, they shall consider whether the noise is related to an event that obtained a valid permit. That was the only thing that was added because a permitting procedure was added.
And that's something the sheriff had asked for also.
Yes. Yeah. And that's something that Eddie Gunter asked for when he was here, or mentioned the need for as well. Yes.
I'm okay with 2.1.
All right.
Yeah.
If y'all are.
I am.
Section 3, exempted noises. No changes were made other than to the numbers. So if you all have something that needs to be added to this, the sheriff would like other categories to be considered, but he did not necessarily say what those were.
One thing I noticed is up in section 2.1, one of the factors to consider is whether the noise is related to the normal operation of a business. But there's no business exemption other than construction operations with building permits and agriculture and lawnmowers, weed trimmers, etc. So there's, I mean, basically, the way I read it, all other businesses will be allowed to emanate noises just like a home.
So So do we need to add normal operation of a business between the hours of 6 a.m. and 9 p.m.?
I would think so.
Is that under 2.1? 3.3. I'm adding it there because I have space to write. Normal operation of business between the hours of 6 a.m. and 9 p.m. to be consistent. And that would be any business.
And do we want to change those times? I mean, you know, that seems pretty standard at first glance, but like, I mean, in the construction materials business, ready mix concrete plants start up at 2 in the morning, asphalt plants start up early.
I've passed concrete trucks in the dark in the morning heading to a job site.
I mean, every busy day we have, we start earlier than 6. And that's, and it's just a standard procedure that, you know, if you have a really big slab to put down of concrete, they want to get it down and get it finished in the morning before rain showers.
So normal operation of a business during normal business hours? So for different businesses, there would be
different hours. So.
But then a nightclub, their normal operating hours are between 10 p.m. and 2 a.m. Are they going to be exempted from the noise ordinance because their normal operation of their business is loud between 10 p.m. and 2 a.m.?
But they're a nightclub. You would expect them to be loud.
Yeah.
That's their business.
Right. Okay. I was just playing devil's advocate.
But now, right now, after 10 o'clock, people can legally complain about loud noises as it is now, can't they?
After 9.
After 9.
But we're saying, say a nightclub opens up next to your house, and then they're making noise all night, you're removing your right to ever complain about that. And I do take issue with that. Because there's nothing to prevent a nightclub from opening up next to anyone's house.
That's right.
So I would put ourselves in the landowner who was there first and then had someone else come in and put a nightclub in. So I think it's two sides of the same coin we need to kind of look at. Because I think anyone here would be pretty upset if a nightclub opened up next to them with all that noise, and then they always said, oh, well, but you can't complain about it. Now, I would also hope it wouldn't have to go to court, but you know how that is. So.
Normal business hours, that's relative to the business.
It is.
If you define it that way, you open that door. And part of the problem, of course, is I'm going to say the terrible word, there's no zoning, so there's no way to prohibit it.
Well, there's no way to prohibit it.
Right.
Somebody putting a nightclub anywhere they want to, basically.
So by exempting normal operation of a business, we are allowing any business to be exempt.
Well, it also kind of adds a loophole so a business can say, oh, we're open 24 hours a day. So we can make noise 24 hours a day if we choose.
There's another
So do we want to add that, or do we want to select a specific type of business, or do we want to just not add that and leave it as it is?
Could we say that noise during normal business hours and then so long as, and put some limitations on it? Or could you long as they don't disturb any neighbor within 1,000 feet or something like that? I'm just throwing that out of the chat. There might be other things.
can we regulate like industrial business is one way and
That's
retail services business is another way? Or
that might be a good way to start to separate these things out.
But is that legal to?
I have no idea.
to separate businesses like that, you know?
I mean, some nightclub owners like, why is he going to do something I can't do?
Well, I mean, if we can exempt small engine yard maintenance.
Airplanes.
And airplanes.
And the airport gets a free ride.
And yet, in reality, they don't.
Right.
Yeah, because the airport's closed.
Yeah.
The airport closes at dusk. There's no more flights in or out after dusk. That means the airport.
Industrial business, retail business, entertainment business?
Well, I would think if you only exempt industrial type businesses, then that leaves
everything else
in the.
You see, that opens up the door for misinterpretation or lawsuits and stuff like that.
Now, if you define what industrial is, there's the forest community
zoning. SIC codes.
What?
There would be some standard list of SIC codes.
If our whole purpose on this is to maintain within reason and normalcy, the peace and solitude of the community and all that, we can't lose focus of what the whole idea of this is all about. You know, we're trying to preserve the peace and tranquility of the county within reasonable limits. Is that not right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It is.
Yeah, I think, everybody has a little different philosophical approach, but to me, you know, the ordinance should be there to eliminate the worst, truly obnoxious problems.
Because everybody's got to work.
But generally, I'm in favor of people being free and being able to do what they want to do, and I tend more to let some small amount of people get away with maybe not extremely obnoxious sounds, but some sounds that are borderline before you restrict more people and their freedom to do what they want to do on their property. And that's just me personally, but you know, this is not like a noise ordinance for a subdivision or a community. It's a countywide ordinance to eliminate the worst problems. Just my philosophy.
We can't make it too specific because we're looking at 243,000 acres of land and everything in it. So there has to be some generalistics in it. It can't be, you can't nail everything down that I see.
And right now the only services that are exempted are yard maintenance and construction.
What do you think about adding anything else other than yard maintenance and construction, industrial?
Everyone has a yard if they own a piece of property. There's a yard. It might be forests, it might be grass, it may not require any maintenance. And if we're developing construction for residential or commercial use, we need to be able to provide that construction. I would be hesitant to add one type of business and not all types of businesses, or a few select types of businesses. However, the sheriff did ask for more clarification on what would be exempt, and identifying industrial, but we would have to define industrial, but we could identify industrial operation or industrial businesses as being exempt, realizing that they are similar to construction and yard in that there are going to be loud noises coming from them as they operate their businesses.
And similar to find
a way out of that with some businesses, that they're going to have loud noises.
Yeah.
See, the planning board, I think, is going on record of being pro-supportive of industry and jobs in this county in the long-range plan.
To me, there's a distinction, too. If the house is there and business is built next to it, that's a little different than the business being there and you building your house next to it and then complain about the noise. I don't know how to differentiate between that and
right.
A good example is the Ken Allison Airport down there between Kevin Cohn's property and Andy Broadbent's.
Right.
That's an ideal example of exactly what you're saying.
So I have a situation where we had a substation that a guy built a house right next to it and then complained when the circuit breakers operated. And you could hear them. And the way our permanent fault, the circuit breaker operated three times before it quit, before it locked out. And every time that happened, we got a call. He wanted us to move the substation. And there's no reason.
And then
you get all these noise complaints at airports and whatnot. People move in and they're complaining the airport, the airplanes landed over. Take it off.
And then there is something to be said for what you call the general good, you know, the majority.
Well, and it's just, I mean, it's expected that a lot of industrial sites are going to work shifts and, you know, different hours. I mean, that's a standard.
This can be a real quagmire.
It could be. If we add one type of business, then are we being preferential to that?
And if we try to make it too specific, we're going to shoot ourselves in the foot.
I mean, that's the whole problem with saying that a nightclub owner can't—they can open their business, but then they can't actually play any music. I mean, you're at the same time, who's looking out for the person who bought a house there 50 years ago and have lived there 50 years ago for 50 years, and then suddenly have a nightclub?
And that's part of our job to look at.
Yeah, I mean, where is the balance of that? So I worry about getting too specific also, because some of this is going to have to be weighed in on case by case. And we're not going to be able to write out every possible.
You see, that goes back to what Mac was saying. There's going to be some slide through the cracks. I don't think we could write a perfect noise ordinance. I just don't see it could be done. I would rather a few slide through the cracks and have to be dealt with individually than to try to nail every single thing.
Right,
down.
To figure out every possible scenario.
We'd forget something. We'd miss something if we tried.
But you all want to include industrial businesses as exempt.
Do we have a lot of those that make noise?
Well, I would hope they all.
Yeah,
we're working three shifts, and I mean, that just personally.
Sandy, like it used to be, Acosta, DuPont, American Thread, everybody had three shifts.
And it was good paying jobs.
I feel
like we need to accept businesses that are naturally.
If you were, sometimes you could hear Acosta if you were close to it, you know, things going on. Nobody bothered that.
That's because Acosta and DuPont kept this county going.
We had a small business move in as well. No, we want them to be limited.
But they may not be industrial in nature.
I'm thinking industrial in nature.
You're thinking industrial in nature.
So what would you consider the difference between industrial and commercial? Or is there a difference?
Maybe commercial is a better word.
Commercial is
anything
that makes something.
Anything with a business license.
Anything with a business license. So that's your entertainment center, that's your industrial, that's your retail,
yeah.
That's that's anything.
Yeah.
Industrial and manufacturing is a specific type that is not retail and is not entertainment. It's a specific type of land use.
Doesn't our comprehensive plan mention manufacturing? Try to encourage?
Through supporting a shell building program and supporting incentives.
The existing businesses.
The existing businesses, yeah.
Should we think on it?
We can, yeah.
I wonder if we can get some definitions for industrial manufacturing, sort of some clarification about. I'm still really hesitant to delineate that because I do think it's just you're opening a loophole or crack in there. And someone's going to then feel victimized by it.
We know a good example's down there at Jennings. They're a commercial establishment, but they build trusses, right?
They
so
yeah.
that's not only an industry, but a commercial establishment.
Right. Well, but their truss plant is a whole different
place.
Yeah.
Well, your query. Same thing, it's industrial, but it's a commercial establishment.
So I will look at the definition of industrial and manufacturing in the Pisgah Forest Community Zoning and bring that to you to consider.
Okay.
And that way we can be more fair to everyone.
Or choose not to include it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Are there any other items under the exempted noises that you wanted to look at?
And Mike, you brought up normal operation of businesses between the hours of like whatever normal working hours were. I wonder if, because I think you're right about that, but I also wonder if that sort of already assumed that there's the noise ordinance, which is happening outside of other these kind of, because we're defining noise and loud as events happening at unusual times, right? I'm not being very clear. I don't remember the exact definitions of these. Yeah, what unreasonably loud? Does that automatically say that it's expected businesses or even homeowners are going to be noisy during the day, for example? I don't know if we need. I'm asking if we need to write that provision in as part of this definition in Section 4 or not to further kind of define it.
Well, the only exemption that is exempted with a time limit, or the only two, are construction operations and
lawnmowers.
Yeah. And you'll notice that they are properly equipped according to manufacturer's specifications in both of them.
So before we can proceed on that, you're going to bring back those definitions, right?
Okay. Are there any other things that you would like to consider exempting? Besides the safety signals, emergency vehicles, aircraft, holidays, musical accompaniment at military ceremonies, farming operations.
But there's no general business exemption like from 6 to 9 either.
No.
And it really, to me, it's hard to separate these exemptions from whether or not we include decibel limits. Because if there are clearly defined decibel limits, and they could even be different from 6 to 9 and then at night.
True.
I mean, that really changes the whole. I mean, it's hard to separate. You know, and try to use just these exemptions to write the rule, and then we may turn right around and it would be decimal in us. That's going to take care of
ourselves out.
Most of our.
But we have to think of, if something goes to court, we need, I don't know, I think we need something.
But that is a remedy for those things that we can't regulate. That becomes the final remedy, right? Between landowners. If we can't peg everything down, which I don't think we can.
I think we have a...
Well, noise and nuisance is really a civil type issue, and we're making it a criminal type issue. I mean, that's...
Yeah. I'd rather things fall through the cracks than to get pole vault over that kind of peanut.
So are you saying you can't make a decision until we know if we have decibel levels for exemptions and prohibited noises? Should we revisit these?
I think that makes it hard to, for me, okay, to separate that out. I don't know. What is everyone else's perception?
I can see where you're coming from.
Okay.
I'm really curious about whether this will hold up if we throw decibels in here. Why do it if it has no teeth to it?
Well, do you want to consider the permit procedure, which is the only other thing that has been added, and then revisit the exemptions and the prohibited noises after we know if there is a decibel limit that we could consider or not consider?
A permit will get...
I think it would help to have all the information.
Yeah, I think so.
But you know that the permit process allows whatever authority is granting that permit to make sure that the permittees understand what the limitations are.
Right.
I mean, that's a benefit to it. And if it's all that big of a deal, they probably won't get a permit. But if it's more along the lines of normalcy, yeah, give them a permit. Brevard does it all the time for things, activities in town here.
And like out at the Reed Ranch, when they have the big weekend, they got the bands going and everything, they get a permit.
Right, the sheriff has brought it up, so it must have come up in the past as a some kind of problem or issue.
But if the local fraternity wants to have a big weekend with bands, do they get a permit just like Reed Ranch gets a permit? I mean, I'm just asking.
If it's a one-time event on a specific parcel of land, not a recurring noise. So section 5 on page 5 is where the addition, well, page 5 is where the permit procedure has been added. So section 5 is the beginning of it. Special events that anticipate producing loud noise that could be considered disturbing can obtain a permit to allow a one-time event on a specific parcel of land. Noise permits shall be issued by the enforcement officer upon proper application and approval. No permit shall be issued that would violate the intent and the provisions of this ordinance.
You see, those two sentences counteract each other right there. Well, the first one says that they'll apply for a permit, assuming that they'll get one, but then no permit will be issued if they're going to violate the provisions of the ordinance. Well, then what are they asking for a permit for?
A one-time special event.
I know Reed Branch has to do it through Henderson County. They have to do it for every time they have a blowout down there.
Oh, is that Henderson?
Yeah,
Henderson County. I didn't understand that either.
All right.
We said they can get a permit, then if it violates the intent of the ordinance, they can't get a permit.
That's true.
So.
Okay.
You understand what I'm saying?
I do.
Strike that last sentence.
It's special events. You can get a permit even though it's disturbing noise. But then it says no permit shall be issued if it violates the intent of the ordinance. The intent of the ordinance is not have disturbing noise.
When we say one-time event, are we assuming annually or?
But that's an assumption that is not clear.
It's not in here. That's
what if you were to put
it on once per piece of property?
Yeah, I mean, it just said if you can have one party in that property, so choose a good one.
That'd be good.
What if you put use the adjectives either unreasonably or excessively in front of the word violate? No permit shall be issued that would unreasonably or use the word excessively violate the intent of the provisions of the ordinance. Is there any merit to that? But then, who's going to determine?
Right. Yeah. I like what where you're going. I mean, I like where your head's at on that. I do wonder what is the excessive event.
So who's going to determine that?
Right. Like if KISS comes and plays.
And we can't win for losing.
I don't think the SO wants to have to deal with that once they have a permit.
Promote the health, safety, and general welfare of residents and visitors, and protect the interests of local businesses while providing reasonable regulations. That is the purpose. That is the intent. Mm-hmm. So, if you follow the intent of promoting the health, safety, and general welfare, you can do that loudly once a year. Because a fundraiser may very well promote the health of citizens. And you can protect the interests of local businesses because that fundraiser may be essential for them keeping their doors open.
Correct.
So,
but what if they want to do it once a month or once a quarter?
Then it is not following the intent of the ordinance. That's why that second sentence was there. And I see how you could see that, view that as contradicting. But if they want to do it once a month, then that is regular
usage. That's not one time.
It's not one time. It is not a...
Now, the way you worded that, you just did some wordsmithing right there on that. That sounded pretty good, George.
Darn, I wish you were taking notes, Bob.
It's all right there. And there.
Oh, no, I didn't get it.
Is there a legal basis for this ordinance to allow a violation of the ordinance once a year?
That's a good question.
I mean, what if somebody, and I think we used to have them years ago, what if somebody wanted to have a tractor pull?
Mm-hmm.
Now, by gosh, that'll go out and above the noise ordinance. But
that
would be fun. They are fun. But what if they were raising funds for a, say, Boys and Girls Club or something, or any benevolent group?
Right.
That's benevolence, but it's in violation of the ordinance. So what do you do?
The intent.
Well,
you can't have a tractor pull at 2 a.m.
Well, yeah, that would be kind of crazy.
It'll be during the day.
It would be during the day.
But it's not exempt.
It's not exempt.
What if you have an organization who wants to have a carnival, mm-hmm, and keep it for a week?
Like they used to right here at the park.
I mean, that used to be, happened almost every year around here, sometimes twice a year. You would have a carnival come to town, set up wherever they could, and be there for a week or 10 days.
They used to do it in the field across from the Acosta down there.
Yeah.
We're not defining the length of this anywhere. We're just saying annually or once per year on that piece of property. So theoretically, the carnival could literally move one property over, get a permit, but I think more importantly, we're not saying it has to be so many hours. I mean, the carnival is set up and be there for 8 days. If they get a permit for that, that's fine, right?
So it's going to be 65 days.
Well, maybe that's the way I would be for that. But
are we beating this to death on things that...
Well, it seems like it, but these are the very first things that matter.
They are.
You know, I mean, somebody wants a permit, the sheriff's department needs guidance on what to go by, and that's... It's already a loud noise. It's probably going to be at odd hours, bad hours. And
the carnival would normally go at 11 o'clock or something like that. Yeah.
10 or 11. But you see, that's how you would limit excessive noise relative to the neighbors by putting the time limits on it. And still allow something to happen once a year, but put constrictions on it.
I wonder if this is also a case by case. I mean, are we following, we're doing a lot of what ifs, and we can't, we're not going to be able to figure out every single.
No, we're not. That's what I'm saying. Are we beating it to death?
Because I do think if someone goes to the sheriff and says, I need to get a permit for this, I'm confident they can work out.
They had asked to do that.
Right. I mean, they want to be in control of that.
And there was no permitting structure in place.
So I think if we have the permitting structure, someone says, okay, I have a carnival I want to operate for 2 days, then the sheriff can say yes or no or regulate however they see fit. Instead of us saying it can only be 6 hours long, it can only happen these times, it can only happen blah, blah, blah.
So if we share the grief on with this and let some of the other organizations kind of own up to setting the parameters,
yeah.
And we've done our job as far as guidelines.
Yeah, I think we put the framework in,
but that's what the sheriff was asking for, was specific.
More specific.
Well, I think what we're working in here with like an annual one-time event, those kind of things are good. I wouldn't take those out, but I don't think we can say, unless it's a carnival that's here 8 days, or unless it's a tractor pull that's benefiting boys and girls, except, you know what I mean? It's like trying to take it too many what-ifs down the line.
Yeah. And the bottom line is the issuing agency doesn't have to issue a permit.
That's true. Right.
And that's out of our hands.
Yeah.
So that's our way out. Well, way out's not good. I mean, that's our solution right there. We let the agencies decide whether it's allowable or not.
As long as we give them a reasonable framework to work in.
Exactly.
I think that's...
So is there a reasonable framework here?
I think there is.
All applications for permits shall be submitted to the enforcement officer, the sheriff's department. Application shall contain the following information: property description, including address, property identification number, and the owner's name; event description, including purpose, duration, time frame, and anticipated noise. All permit applications shall be accompanied by the following documentation as appropriate: mass gathering permit, which there is one; documentation of approval from the fire marshal. Does the site have enough space and safety for a large event? Mm-hmm. And documentation of notice sent to neighboring property owners.
Now that right there, notice to neighboring property owners, means that nobody can say that they weren't notified, or at least that the permitting agency didn't try. Mm-hmm. How can we do any better than that?
And can 6.2... I'm just going to say, can 6.2 anticipated noise cover everything we were just talking about in section 5? So they're going to know on the application what's anticipated, and especially decibels, if it's going to have decibels in here.
Now, what happens if all the neighbors call the enforcement officer and say, I am completely against this?
That could happen.
Or what if the neighbors say, this is awesome. Thank you for allowing this to occur.
That's even better.
What does he have, a split?
Right. At least there will be a notice sent to neighboring property owners.
I don't think they're asking permission. I think they're just saying, this is going to happen. Go out of town if it's really going to bug you. It's not, the sheriff's not going to go and say, we really wish you would approve this.
Of course, the sheriff can take all that into consideration when he's
right
to issue the permit. If he feels like too many people are against it, I guess he can refuse it.
And that's his prerogative. He's operating within the framework of the ordinance here.
Do you see any other things the permit application would need to have?
How much notice do they have to give the neighbors?
A completed permit application has to be submitted to the enforcement for review. The enforcement officer for review at least 30 calendar days prior to the scheduled event. So documentation is included in a complete application. So 30 days? Is that too much time?
Oh gosh, any big organization that's lining stuff up, they've been lining it up for months and months ahead of time.
My question comes from the point of official notices, whether it's a telecommunication tower or a mountain ridge protection ordinance or a public hearing has to be between 10 and 25 days before the public hearing.
And those are the legal.
Those are the legal. It can't be closer to the public hearing than 10 days, and it can't be more than 25 days. So if there's already been documentation sent to the neighboring property owners, or a notice sent to the neighboring property owners 30 days before the event, is that too much time?
Probably.
25 days? If it's a last minute thing and not something that's 20 months ahead of time, they need time to get the young property owners notified, so maybe 20 days.
What about? I mean, I know we're thinking about special events like an outdoor concert or something like that, but what about like a business that has an emergency and they need to bring in cranes and stuff and work on their facility at 10 o'clock at night or to work all night to fix some kind of issue? I mean, there's no exemption for anything like that, and they could get a permit except they'd have to do it 30 days ahead.
And they would.
Impossible. I mean, does there need to be?
Well, now, if it was a repair that needed, or something that needed to be done in the interest of public safety, that would fall under emergency management. And emergency management they don't even have to pay attention to this in an emergency. They do what they have to do, period.
But is that the way our exemption is? I mean, is it?
Yeah, I would go say I think you can give them a time frame for a concert or something, but have a provision for an emergency.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've been out on jobs like where they were blasting, and maybe they have an issue, the truck breaks down, they can't get the shot loaded, and once you load it, you have to shoot it. I mean, you can't wait till 6 the next morning, and people are like, I know I'm going to pay a $50,000 fine, but we're shooting this at 2 in the morning. And there's no exemption or exception. Or
so, under exemption, would you want an exemption for noises from emergency repairs to an existing business?
A slide on the road? Do you require immediate repair? I would assume anything on the DOT would be exempted anyway, but not the subdivision road.
But if we were to put something like that in there, like for emergency situations and or conditions, then it's covered in here, and it just lends credence to the fact that, like a landslide, DOT with their big equipment out there and the backup alarms on their diesel engines, equipment and all that, they could be easily operating in the middle of the night.
Yep.
In the interest of public safety.
And they should. And they certainly wouldn't want.
That's a good clarification there. That's good.
Well, would 3-4 cover that?
Yeah, I think 3-4 does cover it.
Because it's not just medical, it could be
acting in time of emergency. So like if you have a bunch of tree falls, even in the subdivision, you gotta get out there and chainsaw them.
But is that only accepting the authorized emergency vehicle?
Well, that could be changed to noises resulting from any authorized emergency services when responding. And see,
emergency actions or something like that.
Because you got to do what you got to do if it's in the middle of the night to open up a road for public safety. And if you say emergency services, that covers them all. Fire, rescue, EMS, DOT, emergency management. Power companies, utilities, emergency management.
But that doesn't cover, emergency services doesn't cover the private business.
A grading company out.
That is.
Working on a subdivision road to Sweden or something like that.
So how would you add that in?
I would say emergency actions instead of, I mean, emergency services are like government. Emergency services, but you just say.
And we want to include private and non-governmental.
Like your rock crusher just being broke down, you want to work all that to get back up.
So, what about noises resulting from any authorized emergency services or actions when responding?
No. How about actions?
Emergency actions when responding to any emergency call or acting in a time of emergency.
So what we're doing is good. We're clarifying.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to give common sense understanding. So what did you come up with on that, Joy, on 3.4?
Noises resulting from any authorized emergency actions when responding to any emergency call or acting in time of emergency.
I'm good with that. And then that'll cover private. Well, yeah, if you had one of your dump trucks go off and the wrecker had to block the highway and work out there all night to pull that truck up the side of the mountain, you do what you have to do. Yeah. Yeah, I'm good with that. Yeah. That's good.
Old falls down there, going to work all night and putting it back up.
Yeah, power companies do, and yeah. I hadn't heard anybody complaining about the power companies.
Yeah, you know, I never heard anybody complain about putting them back in service.
All right, Joanne, where are we?
I'm in section 6, where it says applications shall be contained the following information. Just B still there.
Or applications shall be considered complete when they contain the following information.
Okay.
What did we decide on the 30 days? We're going to drop that back to the legal of everything else.
I was going to ask, did we solve the 30-day problem? Is it
if we... If they have to have a completed application, to the enforcement officer 25 calendar days prior to the scheduled event, then they would have met the legal notice requirements, because they would have to provide documentation that they have provided notice to neighboring property owners. What comes into an issue is if they show up on the 25th day and they're like, oh, I haven't noticed the adjacent property owners, then they won't have the time to do so. If we make it 20 days, that gives them 5 days to send out a certified mail or a letter to neighboring property owners. Mm-hmm.
And that still falls within the legal boundaries.
It does. It's between 10 and 25 days.
I'd be good with either one on that night.
10 or 25. I did 20.
Should we give the Sheriff's Department some type of ability to accept that if there's some good cause? In the judgment of the sheriff, that
on which one?
That time constraint.
Well, no, that, yeah, we.
I mean, if something comes up last minute,
you're right,
and it's really not very far out of bounds of the noise ordinance, then the sheriff could just say, you know, that's reasonable. Here's your permit. I mean, just.
But that puts the responsibility on them.
The sheriff's office. There would be no notice to the neighbors and impromptu.
But then the sheriff's department would be responsible for that if complaints came in. Well, why did you not follow the process here? That's out of our hands. That would be the sheriff's department, the permitting, issuing agency.
So a completed permit application shall be submitted to the enforcement officer for review at least 20 calendar days prior to a scheduled event unless unless
Steve Martin has a house in Silver State. Let's say he flies in on Thursday and says, the Boys and Girls Club just did something great, and I'd like to have a blowout for them Saturday. Is the sheriff going to say, I'm sorry, but we have to have 30 days notice?
Yeah, I don't think that's right.
And it's, I mean, and maybe there's some other, something else comes, but just in case something comes up and the sheriff sees that obviously it's not going to be an issue in their judgment, then...
Well, that's what they have to do now without a permit procedure. They have to use their judgment to see, is this likely to cause a disturbance to the peace and tranquility of the camp?
At some point, you have to rely on people's ability to make sound decisions.
Shouldn't we give them that? I mean, they have the ordinance if they want, you know, if they need to make people stick to it, but then, and I don't know how you word that, but.
Well, you were coming up with possible wordsmithing.
What you see in other ordinances is as applicable or unless other arrangements, down in the down in below, the enforcement officer may allow the applicant 30 calendar days or a reasonable time period agreed upon by both parties in writing. So we could steal that piece of or a reasonable time period agreed upon by both parties in writing. And put it up here as well. A completed permit application shall be submitted to the enforcement officer for review at least 20 calendar days prior to a scheduled event or upon a reasonable time period agreed upon by both parties in writing.
I like that.
You like that?
I like that.
Yeah. Way to go, Joy. Yeah. And see, we're setting theoretical parameters that are amicable to the permitting party and the permittee. And that leaves it up to them, following general guidelines. I like that.
The reason I say that, we had a piece of equipment break down at one of our quarries that was destroyed, and it had to be replaced. Well, under the existing air permit rules at that time, you had to give 90 days notice to the state, and you had to give post 90 days notice in the newspaper before you could modify your permit to put that piece of equipment in. And there's no exemption.
You were just shut down?
I mean, you were shut down for 3 months, even though you could put a new piece of equipment in the next day. And there was no exception.
You either
shut down and lay everybody off for 3 months and have no customer, or you put a piece of equipment in.
That's unreasonable.
And it's a
financial burden.
But, I mean, whatever the situation might be, if it's obviously not an issue, that gives the sheriff's department the ability to make a good call. I like to give people the ability to the chance to do what's right.
So a fee is required to be paid at time of submission. So the fee will be determined by the Transylvania County Board of Commissioners.
I think Section 7 looks great.
Okay. Section 8 is taken from the Telecommunication Tower Ordinance, the Sign Control Ordinance, and the Mountain Ridge Protection Ordinance. If the enforcement officer shall review the application for compliance with the provisions of this ordinance, any permit application not containing all information and not meeting specifications set forth in this ordinance shall be rejected and returned to the applicant together with the reasons for rejection. The enforcement officer may allow the applicant 30 calendar days or a reasonable time period agreed upon by both parties in writing to resolve any deficiencies in the application, which, if resolved, would make the application complete.
And right now, that's you.
No. This would be the sheriff's department.
Oh, yeah, but not for other stuff on
true.
The other way.
That's not. Now, there may be times where the application is complete, but due to the nature of the noise, it may not be permitted. So is this ordinance different than the other ordinances? Do we need to...
I wouldn't think so, because there's allowances in here for things.
Okay.
We're allowing for things to be able to happen.
Okay. The last piece is after the enforcement officer has determined the applicant the application meets the intent of the ordinance and contains all information required, they shall issue a permit. So if it does not meet the intent of the ordinance, they will not issue a permit.
With that one? Yeah, but now, up to per offense. Is that in a 24-hour period or per day or?
What section?
9.1. I'll give you an example. If a person is in violation of erosion control laws, every day that they're out of compliance is considered an offense. Well, every day is theoretically every 24 hours.
Okay.
So maybe we don't have to say that here, but if somebody says, well, how often is an offense?
I would say that's probably every time they have to go out there, like the sheriff or deputy goes out to the, gets called out. Is this, these penalties are not pertaining to a permitted defense. These penalties are pertaining to anything in the ordinance. So if someone calls and says, this guy's dog is barking at 3 in the morning, I mean, that's, you're not going to get penalized for that, but if the sheriff then has to go out there, is that, is, I mean, I'm asking, is that what an offense is?
As long as we all realize or agree that per offense is per visit, per sheriff's office visit.
That, to me, that's what it should be. I mean,
that, me too, yeah.
If the fine's $500 and somebody calls the sheriff's department for a barking dog, that dog barked all week,
right.
So they can't write you.
They can't write one every time the dog literally barks. I think it's per visit, maybe.
Okay.
I know that historically, if there was a loud party going on in the county, and this used to happen out at Little River Campground back in the rowdy days, the sheriff's department would go out once and verbal warning. They'd go out a second time, and either a verbal or a written warning, they'd go out the third time and the party shut down. So, and see, that's relative, those are your offenses. And visits.
Yeah.
Well, those were the days out there, you know. Now, Joy, 9.1.2.3. I want 9.1.2.3 here. In other words, that was data that came from the Sheriff's Department, right? I mean, the legalistics on arrests and citations and warrants and all, and civil.
That is what is in the current noise ordinance. Nothing here except the numbers have changed. The numbers have been changed to meet the format of the other ordinances. That is all that has been changed here.
Okay.
I do have to say I may have changed Article 6 to correspond to the article that it was referring to. I feel like that should be highlighted, and it's not. But in 9.1, it has an article that it's referencing.
Yeah.
I believe that that... No, it wasn't. It wasn't changed. Okay, come on.
We have Section 9, penalties.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next section is Section 7.
Section 10. Yep.
We're going to start all over.
Thank you for catching that.
Joy just did that to see if you were going to catch it.
I thought Danny would be on that like 10 minutes ago. Okay. I was getting worried. I was like,
see, we're being tested here to see.
There haven't been any issues or complaints with the penalties part of the existing ordinance. That I know of.
Not that I know of.
When the sheriff's department came, they didn't really talk about that. It was just wanting clarification on.
And it's not in the email from Sheriff Mahomes.
I would be fine.
Where did this all come from? Is this And so, I mean, this is procedure. This is the way it's
done. It's the existing from
it's the existing.
Her ordinance.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm fine with all of it. Violations, penalties.
So next month we'll look at definitions. We'll hear from the county attorneys about decibels and case precedences regarding that. And we'll look at definitions of industrial manufacturing. And consider exemptions and prohibited noises in relation to decibels. If most likely that would be the following meeting, we would hear about whether decibels could be included or not, and then at the following meeting we would look at, depending on the time, I'm not sure what else would be on the agenda for next month, but depending on time we may look at it immediately after, or we may consider decibels and the implications for the ordinance at the following meeting, however you all would like to proceed.
Yeah, I think we need to get clarification on the decibel thing before we move any farther.
All right.
Next. Small area plan update.
So on January 28th, the county commissioners approved the small area planning process.
Yes.
They are currently accepting applications from residents of Cedar Mountain to be on the small area planning committee. Planning board members do not have to apply to be on the committee, because you are not going to be on the committee. You are going to support the committee and maybe attend public input meetings, but you will receive the information from the committee and help guide and support them. But you don't have to be actual members on the committee unless you would like to. If you would like to, then you need to submit an application. Does that make sense?
Any reason to? Because, you know, they being living in Cedar Mountain and being on the planning board, they wanted me to be a part of it. But if I don't have to submit an application...
You can be a part of it as much as you have time and interest as a planning board member to be, and as a resident, to be a part of it. But you don't have to be on the planning committee.
That might be better.
Yeah, that's good.
So you're saying that means we can go to the meetings they may have or whatever, or their public input meetings, which I hope they're going to have some. But
yeah.
We're basically just there to observe.
To hear what the public is saying during the public input sessions.
While we're talking about applications, I spoke to two people about putting in an application for the planning board, one female and one male, so I don't know whether they did or not, but
okay.
Either one I thought would be a very good fit.
And we'll get a planning board notifications about when they're holding public meetings. Cedar Mountain,
right. The Cedar Mountain application is due the 6th of March, I believe, if I'm remembering correctly. March 15th, okay. Sorry. March 15th. And so there is no small area plan committee at the moment. So it will be some time before there is any meetings or actions.
That was the application done?
Yeah.
When is the deadline?
March 15th.
The notice says March 15th.
I have some questions about this whole process. You know, on this small area plan process that they approved, the second bullet point says, Planning Board recommends to Board of Commissioners to allow community to proceed with the planning process. But the commissioners made, from what I understand, they made one motion to approve this process and to start the Cedar Mountain planning process.
And
like the very first step.
In October, Cedar Mountain came to you all as planning board and asked whether you all would support them pursuing a community engagement process for a small area plan.
Okay.
And so you, as a board in October, you supported them working with me through the process. If you would like something more official, you all are welcome to consider making a motion tonight to approve or disapprove.
Well, it's probably a little late. The horse is out of the barn. But, but I mean, that did, it just seemed kind of funny to me that the very first step in the process got skipped.
It's a learning experience.
Sure. Sorry, I interrupted you. Did you have more?
No, that was my update. They're accepting applications.
The planning and community development update.
Oh no, that was my update for the small area planning. Oh yes, you already elected. Small planning and community development update. The planning board approved the recommendations to the watershed ordinance to be sent to the county commissioners at your meeting in January with the watershed map. It is on the agenda for Monday, February 25th at 7 p.m. The planning or the Board of Commissioners under new business has the Watershed Protection Ordinance of Transylvania County. They will be receiving your recommendations.
What, when did you say that?
Monday.
This coming Monday?
Yes.
23rd?
Yes.
Well, let me come back. And that's at 7.
So they'll consider it as we send it up to them?
They will receive it and may elect to hold a public hearing. They will, after the public hearing, they will choose any revisions or they will consider what you have sent to them. But always the first step is them receiving it. If you're able to come, that would be great. I unfortunately will not be there. I will be on leave. So I did not find out it was on the agenda until today. So the county manager as interim planning director will be presenting. Mm-hmm. Okay. Unless the chair would like to.
I'm fine with them. Either way, I mean, I don't mind doing it. But.
Okay. Are you available Monday?
That's a good question. Okay. I'll check and see.
Check and see. So, watershed ordinance will be received. Last year, the county received letters of interest from developers interested in developing workforce housing. And an RFP has not been issued yet to move forward with that project. It would be developing workforce housing on county-owned land behind the animal shelter. Water and sewer is available. The Board of Commissioners will be considering issuing an RFP to develop workforce housing on March 12th.
Now, is that behind the landfill or on the landfill?
Adjacent to.
I don't think it can be on the landfill.
It's, no, it's not on it. If you, so the animal shelter is at the road.
Mm-hmm.
The NCDOT maintenance yard is there. The landfill is here. There's this acreage right here that is county owned.
Yeah.
And based on North Carolina general statutes, they are able to provide assistance for developing affordable and workforce housing. as long as 20% of the units are affordable to low-income individuals. Or low to moderate income individuals.
That's that land we looked at. That land we looked at. Please.
Yeah.
Any idea the size of the units they're thinking of?
About 40. That is a guess.
Yeah.
Until we receive proposals, right. We don't have a firm number.
Very interesting article in the paper today about inability to retain teachers. Part of the problem is affordable housing.
Well, you know, Carol Parker was trying to work on that property across from the high school.
I know. Mm-hmm. And, his plan was to let somewhere in the plan it was to have the students who were in effect to build the houses, which was going to be one a year.
And yeah, but that's a start.
And that it fell apart on that, is my understanding.
Yeah.
So that's the affordable housing / workforce housing RFP will be on the March 12th agenda.
All right.
The U.S. Postal Service across the United States has provided guidance for cluster box units. When there is a subdivision or a multifamily housing development or a manufactured home park, for the safety and efficiency of delivering mail, they're moving towards these cluster box units for delivering mail. North Carolina Building Code recently was revised, and it became effective January 1st. Part of that building code requires sidewalks on both sides of all streets and roads that serve a cluster box unit. So a subdivision that has more than 8 units will likely be required by the Postal Service to have a cluster box unit. If that is true, the North Carolina Building Code will require them to have sidewalks. So there is a need likely to look at the subdivision ordinance in relation to North Carolina State Building Code to see if there's a minor subdivision that goes up to 8 units and then a major subdivision that is above 8 units due to the cluster box unit. Or do we leave the subdivision and let leave the subdivision ordinance as is? It creates reviewing subdivision plans difficult because North Carolina Building Code says one thing and our subdivision ordinance says another.
Which one would rule?
Huh?
Which one would rule? State?
Yeah.
Is that a good question?
It's usually the state regulations trump the local.
Yeah.
However, there's a question about this. So I know we're currently working on noise ordinance, and it is the intent to have the county attorneys come next month. But due to this, we may have to review the subdivision ordinance and the manufactured home park ordinance. Soon.
Does that have like a certain density or so many, like 8 houses within a certain distance?
I need to look specifically at the wording of the North Carolina Building Code 1104.1 and 1104.2 to see if there is. Based on the information I have received, that it is applicable if a cluster box unit is required, period. And so where the U.S. Postal Service requires a cluster box unit, sidewalks will be required. And so the exact wording, I will get that for you and have an excerpt of that for you all to read and consider. I have a call out to the U.S. or an email out to the U.S. Postal Service determining how phase development is affected by cluster box units or what the Postal Service would require if the total subdivision has 88 units planned, but the first phase only has 5 units, but a cluster box unit isn't required until you get to 8 units, where does that leave the review? So I have a call out to the U.S. Postal Service, but I wanted to give you a heads up. There may be some changes needed soon to both the manufactured home park ordinance, because the Postal Service in their guidance says that manufactured home park ordinance is considered more transitional or temporary, and that requires a cluster box unit. And so you will hear more about that.
Those apartments out on the Greenville Highway, directly across from Brevard Elementary, as you turn into those units there, there are groups of mailboxes at each entranceway into the area. The development where Randall Lighty's barn used to be, that there on Old 64, don't they have cluster boxes at each one of those condo buildings up in there?
So when the building code changed January 1st, it included a clarification of what the expectations were around these boxes. And so that's where the sidewalks come in, specifically being in addition to ADA accessible parking units adjacent to the cluster box units.
Now, the sidewalks, are the sidewalks supposed to be from the residences down to the cluster boxes, or in front of the cluster boxes, like a, you know, the sidewalk that goes nowhere?
There you go.
And that's something that subdivision ordinance doesn't have any sidewalk requirements for any density. Or
it does not. And so that's where the incongruence lies. Inconsistency lies between the building code and the subdivision.
I'm sitting here thinking, where we have subdivision, and I would think sidewalks would be applicable. I mean, most of the subdivisions in the county are spread out.
So county planners from counties across North Carolina are concerned about this and talking about this and the impact that it will have. We are not the only county concerned.
I mean, sidewalks are wonderful, but I'm thinking about where I lived there, and when there were farms, we had sidewalks. I don't know.
Yeah, and where would they go?
And where would they go?
Right? It's just like the sidewalk in front of those ones I was just talking about on Old 64. It starts and it ends.
Well, and every subdivision that goes in, we have to give a variance for road width and curb radius, because there's no room for a road.
It makes sense to have sidewalks.
Most of us for sidewalks. What are the odds if the other counties are having problems with this, that if we just give it 6 months or something, it might go away?
I do not have a crystal ball. I'm not sure.
I have to talk to the legislators.
It's the Department of Insurance who's providing guidance on this, and so it might come up. It takes a long time for the North Carolina Building Code to be modified, and so I don't know how long it would be to amend it.
I mean, part of the problem is there's been a code change already that North Carolina decided not to adopt. So we're still, until this year, we're working on the 2012 code, where most of the country was on 2015. So these code changes are rolling in, and we're having to track not only the new code changes, but how they were changed in 2015 according to 2012. So it's like, really, this is happening to us, and it's gotten to be incredibly complicated. We basically just skipped a whole code revision in 2015. So
is it like double code revision?
It kind of is, because like the new code, there's a lot of small changes, but when you add them up, they become significant. And we have to track through what's a code change from 2015 and what's a code change from 2012. So you're trying to look at both. So just give a heads up, that's going to be a headache for a lot of people for a year until it gets straightened out.
See, right here it says, satisfactory walkways shall exist for the carrier where required. So a lot of this...
And this is U.S. Postal Service. This is not the building code.
Yeah, this is for their benefit.
It is the Postal Service document that I handed you. But it provides guidance on what the cluster box units look like and how they're installed.
At Bernard College, in the new housing down there, they have cluster boxes. Out there, I forget what they call it, but you know the latest housing that they built down there.
So, that's all I have.
Okay. Do you have any other new business? If not, we'll move on to public and board member comments. Would y'all like to... Do you have any comments?
Sorry, I didn't hear.
That's fine.
Regulations, we just try to put together regulations. They've got to be broad enough to cover everything you can't even imagine. And if they get too specific, somebody can live within the letter of the law and break everything that you're trying to accomplish. I understand the problems.
Thank you. Board member comments? Sandy, you want to go first?
Who
were
the officers? Huh?
Oh.
You're the chairman.
The chairman. Vice chairman.
No.
No,
yeah.
Sandy's the vice chairman. I'm sorry.
Thank you for the comments.
Any comments?
Friday's my last day.
We sure appreciate it.
I just say, doggone it, my fingers are tired.
Next Friday's my last day. Should we buy ourselves again?
But you'll be jumping out of crying.
Do you see there's our interim planning director?
Jamie Lauder, the county manager.
She's filling that thing too.
Basically, I think Joy's doing it all right now.
Cook chief and bottle water.
Yeah. This was good discussion tonight. This just goes right on to say what I've said at every meeting. I've never been on a board that can work through problems like this board right here. I'm not proud of being part of it.
I've told to several people. In fact, the two people I talked to, I said, if you're not interested in working and discussing and trying to reach a solution to the whole plan, don't apply, because that's what we do.
Well, I'm impressed by it, I'll tell you that.
Well, I'd like to thank you for filling in, and you've done a great job.
Yeah, sure.
I appreciate your support and Joy's hard work. It seems like every meeting we can dream up more than three people could chase down before the next meeting. But it's pretty easy for us to come up with ideas, but it takes a lot of work to actually see that stuff through, and I appreciate it. And I, too, would have to agree. I mean, this has just been a great board, and it's been a pleasure to be on it. And in spite of your chairman, it's been a good board. Thank y'all. As a business owner, it's just really frustrating how slow government moves. But really, you know, I mean, we go through these ordinances and it takes 3 or 4 months and it's tedious. But I mean, that's the business of government, and it's intended to give people time to have comments and to come up with these issues. And you know, in business, we could come up with a policy, and if it didn't work, we'd change it tomorrow. If that didn't work, we'd change it again the next day. And that's not how this works. And to be a public service, it just has to move slow. And I do appreciate everybody's hard work, and I think nobody has a hidden agenda. Everybody's out to work out the best thing we can work out. And I really appreciate that.
I hope the public understands that.
Yeah, this is the most synergistic board I've ever been on.
It's a good one.
Congratulations to Mac and Sandy for your new exciting dynamic role in the planning department, in the planning board. And again, I would just echo everything it said. Great, great board.
I hear we have a new member next month. I hope.
We are short a member. It is not on Monday's appointments.
No?
Didn't they vote on one at the commissioners' meeting? There was two, and they voted on one.
Kinsey is remaining on the board.
Yeah, that's right. They put you back on the board.
They
put you back on the
board. Yeah, I've been reappointed, and I've already been sworn and everything. I'm good to go.
And so... There's still one open.
There's still a vacancy, and there's two Board of Adjustment positions that are also vacant. So if there's any appeals from the Pisgah Forest community to zoning decisions, we are down to Board of Adjustment members.
That doesn't mean that we still can't legally act, though, right?
True.
Okay. And hopefully nothing will come up.
And with that, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
Just motion to adjourn.
And I'll second it. All in favor, stand up.